Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 49 of the Peristyle Podcast. If you don't know, the Peristyle Podcast is our little weekly internet radio show talking all things USC. We have a really exciting show for you this week on the podcast. We've got Harvey Hyde coming up a little bit later. We have Dan Wyke talking all about USC football, what's been going on, Mark Sanchez and all that, the new coaches. And we also have USCFootball.com recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez. We got him. We moved him up to the leadoff spot. Just moving things around a little bit today. Harvey Hyde's in Las Vegas right now, so we're going to talk to him a little bit later. We wanted to welcome in Gerard Martinez, USCFootball.com recruiting analyst. He's going to talk about lots of stuff regarding USC recruiting. How are you doing today, Gerard?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling like the lead dog that I get to kick this thing off this week.
Yeah, every week we always have Harvey Hyde. We're going to mix it up a little bit this week, so hopefully the fans don't mind that. Hopefully you don't mind hitting in that leadoff spot, because we always got some really good information with the recruiting and stuff. And I guess the first thing we want to talk about, USC got their latest commitment, the defensive end Kevin Green. Can you talk a little bit about him, please?
Commitment number 18 for USC, and this one's a really intriguing prospect, a guy that I've been kind of pushing for a long time, because just, you know, so much potential with Kevin Green. 6'3", about 235 pounds. And the kid has only been playing football for 2 years. He was a basketball star at Cathedral Sacred Heart, which is a school up there in San Francisco, and it's really not known as a football school. San Francisco, you know, as a city, is not necessarily known for football. I mean, most of the big-time schools are kind of out in the Oakland area, out in the suburbs, like De La Salle. So, you know, this is a guy that's really kind of made his name as a basketball star early in his high school career, and then came on a little later, came down to the skills camp at USC. It was like 2 years ago, and he came down with DeSante Yarnway and Kenny Cavanis, or two other players from Sacred Heart, and did really well. And this was his first camp ever, and you just saw the potential with this kid. You saw this lean, tall, rangy, fast. Kid's got, you know, big hands. He's just kind of one of those kids that just really looks like a player. You just watch him walk in the room, you go, man, this guy's an athlete. You don't know if he's a power forward, you don't know if he's a defensive end, but he's an athlete. And that's kind of what was going on at the skills camp. And we've watched him progress his first year of football. He had 17 sacks as a junior, which is pretty impressive for his first year. And last year, he actually ended up having 28 sacks.
Wow.
He had 22 sacks at the end of the regular season, and then he packed on some more sacks into the playoffs. And they got actually pretty deep in the playoffs this year up there at Sacred Heart. So, just a phenomenal athlete specimen, definitely first guy off the bus type thing. You know, he's really pretty fast. He's a 4.65 guy electronically, and there's no real, you know, hesitation with him in that respect. More of the hesitation, I think, with schools, and maybe a reason he didn't get an offer from Cal, is because, you know, they're wondering how much of a football player the kid really is. You know, this is a lot of potential. This is a guy that's got all those tangibles, all those things that you can look at as measurables, but there's a question of, you know, does he have the instinct? Does he have the awareness? But, you know, it's just for the get it is for USC, for what USC is looking for, couldn't really ask for much more. This is a guy that could really develop and be somebody special.
Yeah, and USC obviously replacing a lot of guys along that defense. So anyone that can come in and has the potential to play right away, I'm sure they are looking at very hard right now. And we're with Gerard Martinez, USCFootball.com recruiting analyst. Forgot to mention, if any of you guys have any questions or comments, then we will answer a couple user questions this week on the podcast. Just drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address. Gerard, big-time recruiting visits coming up, and we just had some this past weekend. I guess maybe we talk about some of the guys that came in this past weekend and kind of what you thought about their visits.
Well, Kevin Green being one of those guys, obviously with the commitment that came from a great visit this weekend. He's a three-star guy, and he'll end up being a defensive end. But USC also had some other big-time guys that were already committed coming in, and the one guy that everybody was kind of talking about was Devon Flournoy. Devon Flournoy is a 6-foot, 180-pound, really kind of a speed receiver, kind of one of those guys you want to get in the Z position, stretch the field. He came in, had a great visit. He's still looking at UCLA and Cal, but I had a feeling talking to him is that he's really pretty set with USC, and something kind of drastic would have to happen for him to go away from that. But he kind of wants to take his time a little bit. It might be an official signing day decision, but definitely had a great visit, rated it a 9. His next best visit that he rated was UCLA, and he rated that a 7. Also had Simeone Lahakite, who came in from Kapolei High School, Hawaii, also committed. He's rated at a 2-star fullback by Rivals.com. USC obviously thinks a lot more of him. They're really excited about him because this is a kid who comes in. He's a physical fullback, kind of guy that comes in and just can blow people off the line, can be that really great lead blocker, but also has a lot of athleticism and has some good hands, and not necessarily a guy that, you know, you bring in, it's like, oh, well, USC's running the football. He can do some things, you know, athletically and skilled-wise, too. He had 10 touchdowns last year, 600 yards, averaged over 10 yards a carry, so, you know, this is a pretty good kid. Physical specimen, 6'1", 240 pounds, definitely kind of a different fullback than Stanley Avili. I think we talked about this last year, USC kind of looking at fullback, looking at categories, fullback, you know, looking at guys that are skilled type running backs that you can develop into a fullback that's kind of a mismatch type guy, and then the guy who's a little more traditional I formation fullback, and Simi is kind of one of those guys. So he had a great visit. Really, I mean, he told me, he said, you know, I wish I could have graduated early because I want to go back now. I'm already homesick for USC. So, you know, I thought there'd be some culture shock there. Simi is originally from Tonga, and then he came to Maui. And Tonga and Maui, there's not a lot of people there.
Not a lot of big population.
Yeah, and so it was a big jump for him going to Oahu. And then, you know, coming to Los Angeles, that was his first time ever being on the mainland at all. Let alone being in Los Angeles, but being on the mainland. So I thought, you know, he would probably have a little bit of culture shock, but he loved it. He was really excited about the visit, and also had Marquis Simmons come in, and Marquis Simmons has been committed to USC for years now, and kind of that family legacy type thing. And this is a guy who gets kind of forgot about a little bit in this class. You know, 6'1", 215. I think he has the potential to be a will linebacker. I don't really see him being a middle guy. He's fast. He's very aggressive. He's a smart kid. He has everything going for him. And I just don't think a lot of people got to see him this year because Dominguez was so bad. This is a team that I think they only won 2 games the whole year. So this is a guy that is a linebacker that is very talented, that has that bloodline. I think he's going to be able to come in. He's going to be a guy that's going to surprise some people. People are going to like what they see from Marcus Simmons. And last but not least, they had Lonnie Fangupo come in this weekend. He was scheduled to come in next weekend. I should say this weekend, the 23rd, but they bumped him up to the 16th, which was great because Loney is also a Tongan citizen. He was born in Tonga, really raised in Tonga, came to the United States just before high school, and he got to hook up with Simeone, and those two guys were chatting it up all weekend long in Tongan, and that's probably helped Simi's transition a little bit too, being in Los Angeles and everything, being able to have some guys that were around him that kind of know where he's from and can relate to. You know, Lonnie Fangupo, there was some talk of him coming in early in the recruiting process, maybe having to sign early. They have a signing period for junior college players in December, and sometimes they can enroll early and be ready for spring ball. That didn't happen for him, so he's probably going to end up enrolling in May. But this is a guy that a lot of people expect to push for that starting rotation. 6'1", 330 pounds, and the kid can run. I mean, I should say the guy can run. He's already been on his mission to the Philippines, so he's mature, too. He's got 2 years to play, and he's a guy that he could play maybe 3-technique, maybe more of a one-shade type dude, but just the pass rusher, tremendously strong on the run. It's going to be fun to see him kind of play and see what he can do, you know, with that rotation with Casey and Spicer. That's kind of where you see him fitting in. So that was the 5 guys, the big 5 that came in this weekend for USC.
Now, Fangupo, I didn't get to see in person, but you shot some film of him that I actually edited, and man, did he look impressive. And Flournoy as well, I got to see him in person a little bit. They didn't get to use him all that much. It was in the CIF playoffs, but just a really well-spoken kid. I think he's going to be a great addition to this team. So lots of exciting people that came in this past weekend. We'll see more about them, and especially heading towards signing day. What about the this coming up? Well, it looks like there's a lot of guys coming in this weekend that'll make some big-time players that'll make the visit to USC.
Yeah, you know, with Simeone Lahakite and Hepaloni Fangupo coming in this past weekend, that's a mouthful of guys to talk about. Well, this weekend, it's a mouthful in terms of the quantity of guys They've got quite a few players coming in. They got Patrick Hall, who's a commitment. Vontaze Burfict, who's a commitment. Jacob Harfman, who's a kicker, who's a commitment. They've got Randall Carroll, who's still sort of a commitment, and James Boyd, who's a commitment. And then on top of that, they bring in Tyler Gaffney, who's a 6'1", 215-pound fullback from San Diego. Now, we talked about Vahekite with the fullback position. The other guy, the other type of fullback that USC is recruiting is Tyler Gaffney. He fits more of the Stanley Havili role. He's a guy who's, I think he ran for 3,000 yards or something like that this season.
Whoa,
58, 56 touchdowns. Ridiculous numbers this year for Tyler Gaffney in San Diego. And they wound up winning a CIF state championship there at Cathedral Catholic. He's definitely that guy that's a running back that would be molded into more of that fullback hybrid guy, the F-slot guy that USC likes to use, that can be that real mismatch in the passing game against a linebacker. Now, the question is going to be, does he go to USC and be fit that role, get into that role behind Havili, or does he want to go to Stanford and be the running back? And there's a little bit of feel that he wants to go to Stanford, be more of a tailback, a big tailback. So that's going to be kind of like a thing that, you know, we're going to see how that goes after his visit, see, you know, how he likes his visit, what kind of impact the coaches make on him with their pitch of making him, you know, a fullback, a guy that is kind of that mismatch type guy. Another kind of an interesting guy coming out this weekend is supposed to be Jawanza Starling from Tallahassee Lincoln High School in Florida. This is a kid who's a safety, about 6'1", 195 pounds, maybe, you know, 200 pounds. Huge hitter, though. This is a big time. This guy lays people out like crazy. Went to the same high school, C.J. Bryant. He takes the same kind of course in terms of his recruitment. He's keeping everything very quiet, not doing a lot of interviews, not a lot talked about with him. But this is a kid that really, his family is really big on academics. It's tremendous because they came out here, and actually a couple weeks ago they were at Stanford. Where do they want to come back and go out to UCLA too? So that would be three Pac-10 schools that would get an official visit from Jawanza Starling. So you have to think that his parents moving away from home for college is not going to be a big issue for him if he's looking at all these West Coast schools. So that's going to be interesting to see kind of how it goes with him. He's a four-star guy, probably one of the more underrated recruits, I think, that Rivals has. He's not a top 100 guy, and quite frankly, I don't see a lot of safeties that are as good as him right now. He's definitely a big-time player. Question's going to come in to play is, with Taylor Mays returning, can USC still pull in a guy like that? That's a little bit of the question that we'll have to see, you know, if that makes an impact on his decision. They've got Tanae Patrick, who's coming in from Alabama. Definitely one of those guys, when you talk about Alabama recruits coming in, USC has a tough track record trying to get those guys. Alabama's playing good football now. You got Nick Saban there. It's tough to pull those guys around. But Tony Patrick is a 6'3", 215-pound linebacker, four-star guy, Rivals 100 guy, Army All-American. You know, SC's just going to try to pitch the depth chart and all the guys leaving and maybe try to make him into a Sam linebacker. So we'll see what happens. I think that one you definitely, Trojan fans, not going to hold their breath on exactly. Like I said, it's just a huge weekend for the most recruits that they've had in on any weekend. And with the guys that are uncommitted, you bring in guys you know, like Randall Carroll, who, you know, a lot of people, a lot of sources that we talk to say he's definitely leaning towards UCLA, that his family kind of wants him at UCLA at this point. And we'll see if USC can kind of change that. Obviously, with you know, the hiring of Jeremy Bates, you know, there's going to be some sales job that USC is going to be able to talk about there, you know, with the offense and what he was able to do with the Denver Broncos. And I don't know if Jeremy Bates is actually going to be in this weekend to be able to talk to the recruits. That's something I don't know yet. But that could maybe sway his decision a little bit. But at this point, it kind of seems like he's leaning towards UCLA. And Vontaze Burfict, he just took his official visit to Arizona State last weekend, did not commit to Arizona State. They're working on him hard, though, and they're working on his family. It'll be interesting to see kind of what his mom and he think about USC on their official visit this weekend, and see if it makes a real big change in his decision and whether Arizona State's still a viable option. So a lot going on this weekend.
Tons.
I will be working 24/7, you know, just the usual. It's January, so I'm used to it at this point.
This is your busy time. You know, people always ask me, like, oh, is it not as busy now that the football season's over. I'm like, well, this is the busiest time leading up to signing day. So it should be interesting. But Perfect is a complete beast. That'll be fun to see what happens on his visit. And I think it's what you mentioned, a good point with Jeremy Bates, the new quarterback coach. I don't know if you're going to be partial offensive coordinator or what, but he's going to be calling the plays. Because I know that some of the, like a guy like a Randall Carroll talked about the USC offense being a little stale or maybe not developing receivers the kind of way that he would like. A guy like that who had so much success with the Denver Broncos and you got a guy, you know, budding star like Jay Cutler singing his praises, that can only help USC recruiting offensive players, I would think.
Yeah, and that's going to be the pitch to him and to the other offensive recruits. The one thing that I think USC, it'll be interesting to see how much they use Matt Barkley in these recruiting weekends as well, because you've got him on campus and he's already kind of working out with the team and he's already kind of a part of the team. And with these receivers, a pretty important part of their decision should be, who's throwing me the ball? Because you don't got somebody who can throw you the ball. And life is going to be a little difficult out there as a receiver. So that's the problem about playing that position. Your fate is in other people's hands as a receiver. If you got a bad offensive line, then your quarterback's getting stacked. He's not getting you the ball. If you have a bad quarterback, well, he's not getting you the ball because he's a bad quarterback. So it's not kind of – unless you run a lot of reverses, it's kind of hard as a receiver to make a decision if you're not kind of looking at some other positions on the offense.
All right. Well, we got a user question we're going to throw at you from Sam. He said he's a big fan of the podcast, and he had a recruiting question. Does USC have a chance with some of the out-of-state linebackers? He mentioned a few guys, Jelani Jenkins, Jarvis Jones, Manti Te'o, and Tana Patrick. I believe that's how you pronounce his name.
Tanae Patrick?
Is it T-A-N-A?
Yes.
Patrick. And, you know, guys like Manti Te'o, a lot of the Rivals experts, for whatever reason, have been, if you read what they're saying, it sounds like USC doesn't have a chance at many of those guys. Can you give some comments on that?
Well, I think that there's not necessarily a lot of knowledge about guys out here and sources and whatnot. It's just kind of a, you know, hey, Manti Te'o is Mormon. He's LDS, and he's going to go on a mission. So that must mean he's going to BYU. I think that's just a safe play for a lot of those guys and a lot of the picks that they make. USC definitely has a good chance with a few of those guys. Tane Patrick, that's a little bit of a stretch. Unless it's just like this complete turnaround of what he's been saying, because a lot of I think his decision is going to depend on playing close to family. And, you know, and I don't know that he has a lot of family out here. Are there really any ties out here to Los Angeles? That's going to be kind of a tough guy to get. Jarvis Jones, this is the guy that's kind of the enigma. Nobody can really figure him out. He's so laid back and cool with the process and relaxed. But it's those kind of guys that USC has been able to get over the past few years. Guys in Georgia, in that Atlanta area specifically, when they're not going to the in-state school and wrapped up for them from day one, it's really open season. There's a lot of schools that are able to get in there, and USC has had some success. Kyle Moore and Bryce Butler, two guys that they've gotten over the past, you know, few years. And Jarvis kind of fits a little bit of that same paradigm. He's kind of the same guy. I'm not saying that they're going to get him, but I'm saying they definitely have a shot. It'll be interesting to see. He's still got his Florida visit coming up. This past weekend or he's coming up this weekend. I think he actually already took his Florida visit. So it'll be interesting to see how much that impacts the decision. A lot of people, in fact, you talked about the expert board, all those guys say he's going to Florida. And when I kind of asked around, you know, what's the feel? Like, why are you guys all so confident he's going to Florida? There really wasn't a lot of confidence there. It was just mainly, well, he's kind of a Florida fan. He's, you know, he kind of said that Florida is kind of his favorite school. But the truth of the matter is, their guess is as good as anybody's guess at this point with Jarvis Jones. Jarvis is just very slick and just very good, and probably because some of it's genuine. He's just really not sure where he wants to go to school yet. And then, you know, Manti Te'o is obviously the big fish out of state out there in Hawaii. Puna High School, the high school of our new president, Barack Obama, Manti, definitely a good shot with USC. I would feel at this point in time USC has the lead. I think I put up a percentage up there on USC getting them in the war room. I'm not going to say it because I want people to go to the war room and check it out, but I'll give a little tease. It was better than 50% for Manti Te'o and USC. And he has actually gone on his BYU trip. A lot of people were asking me about that. That was unconfirmed for a while. He did go out to BYU the weekend he was supposed to, and then he actually went straight out to Chicago for the Buckus Award High School trophy in Chicago. So he was out there for that, and so that was kind of a little bit of a mix-up. People weren't sure if he actually made his BYU visit. He did, and BYU is probably the other school at this point. And it's been that way for a while. People are going, BYU, USC. It seems like early in December, kind of November, people were thinking, he's kind of BYU. I got a lot more talk, I think, coming from the Hawaii Prep Classic All-Star Game in Honolulu. A lot of people were saying, he's going to go to BYU, he's going to go to BYU. And then kind of over the holidays, that seems to have changed a little bit. The consensus seems to be, at least guys I talked to, USC's probably got the better shot. So we'll see how it goes, though. I mean, he's going to be a signing day decision. Jarvis Jones is going to be a signing day decision. It's signing days. There's a lot of pressure. It's a little different deal than just making a commitment, out of the blue because you feel good about a school. Signing day, it's all on that day. It's all on that signature, and it's going to be big. So stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll have lots of stuff. And Gerard was referring to the USCFootball.com war room. We have that go up just about every Friday. We have all the inside scoop of what's going on down at USC. So if you want to read some cool inside rumors and gossip and stuff like that, we got it all in the war room that comes up out on Friday mornings. All right, Gerard, so that's cool. We got the user questions. Sam, thanks for sending that in. We'll have some more user questions later on in the podcast, some team stuff. One guy that's really interesting, and he's one of the highest rated players according to Rivals.com, Devon Kennard. A lot of people just assumed he was going to go to USC. Does it look like there's been some change now? It looks like there's some rumblings from other schools now.
Well, it was interesting because a couple of weeks ago, Devon Kennard was having an in-home visit with USC, and Pete Carroll and Brennan Carroll were there, and Nick Holt was supposed to be there too. Nick Holt has been the guy that was recruiting Devon Kennard for USC for the last really couple of years, and was also his position coach and also the defensive coordinator. Well, Pete and Brennan arrived in Phoenix, but Nick Holt was headed to Washington that week. And that was when he announced that he was going to be the defensive coordinator at the Washington Huskies, and it kind of left USC a little high and dry a little bit. And, Pete Carroll and Brennan Carroll both were in home, and they definitely did a good job of talking to Devon about it, talking to him about, who they would get as a defensive line coach, just kind of reassuring him that, it was going to be a good hire and trying to make sure they didn't kind of screw anything up with him. But at that point, talking to Devon, he was ready to make a decision. And if I had to bet, I think that decision was USC. Now, with Nick Holt leaving, that changed the whole landscape of this thing a little bit, because now he has to kind of get to know this new defensive line coach and the defensive coordinator from start. Now, obviously, Rocky Seto's been in the program before, and Rocky Seto is a guy that I'm sure he's somewhat familiar with, but it's not like it was his position coach. It was the guy recruiting him, was also the defensive coordinator like you had with Holt. So there's a little bit of, rapport that needs to be built there with Rocky, and then big time with Jethro Franklin, who was hired as the defensive line coach. And this is a really short amount of time that he's had to really get to know Jethro and talk with Jethro, and that's the big issue for him right now. I think that, he's got to think about that. He's got to feel comfortable with those guys, and, the amount of time that he has to feel comfortable with them is short and limited. So, you've got ASU, which is kind of out of it at this point. You've got Texas, which is obviously the big kind of out-of-conference school that's been on them for the majority of time here. And you still got Cal in there. A lot of people like to just dispose of Cal and say, Cal doesn't, have a shot at them, and they're kind of dismissive. But Cal has been unique in how they've recruited him. They've recruited him as an outside linebacker because they went a 3-4 up there in Berkeley. So they're recruiting him as an outside linebacker, and that's kind of an intriguing thing, I think, for Devon. I think Devon is enamored with that idea of maybe playing outside linebacker as opposed to playing defensive end. Now, USC countered with saying, well, you can come in and play a little bit of that elephant position, similar to what Kevin Green would be coming in and playing. The elephant position is that hybrid defensive end / outside linebacker. It's a little different than a standard 3-4 in that the technique is different, and you don't have three down linemen that are playing a two gap defense and four linebackers behind them. It's just a hybrid of that. So that's kind of interesting too. Being able to stand up and put my hand down. It's just going to come down to this in home visit that they had last night. Jethro Franklin and Rocky Sipa both came in after Jack Tedford came in. It was a Monday night. This is probably going to be the decision here. He sounds like he does not want to make the decision on signing day. He sounds like he wants to get it done before signing day. But this was definitely a little bit of, it was a change-up for him. I don't think he expected this to happen with Holt, and he had to kind of take a step back, and that's what's happening at this point. So there's a lot of rumors out there, you know, obviously. There's rumors that he's dropped USC. There are rumors that he's committed to Cal. We'll see what goes on. I'll be chatting with him later tonight, and there'll be an update, and we'll see kind of what his impressions were of Jethro Franklin and Rocky Sipa.
All right, well, check back on USAFootball.com for that. For those of you who don't know, Devon Kennard, he's a five-star defensive end out of Arizona. What is he ranked in the country now, Gerard?
He's number eight.
He's in the top ten.
Now. He was six, and then I think he's now dropped to eight. He was number two in the country at one time, but that was before he blew out his knee and he had ACL surgery, and then they dropped him to six, and I believe right now he's number eight in the country overall, regardless of position.
Right, and it's ridiculous. I mean, we've both seen him in person, and just he's a complete stud. So there'll be there's a lot of really good guys in this class. Everyone, keep checking back on USAFootball.com. But, Gerard, we're about 25 minutes, not too bad. Thank you very much for your time, though, and we will talk to you again next week.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, nice. You did a Ricky Henderson job leading off. We'll be right back, though, after this short break. We're going to talk to Dan Wyke, get some more information on the USC team, all coaching changes, and all that. So stay tuned.
The Peristyle Podcast will be back after this short break. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater.
USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham. And as always, if you have any questions or comments, you can always drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. In this segment, we're going to talk some about the team stuff. We talked recruiting with Gerard Martinez last segment. Now we're going to talk about what's going on with this team, all the stuff that's been going on since the end of the Rose Bowl, end of the season. We got Dan Wyke from USAFootball.com. Dan, what's up, man?
How you doing, Ryan?
Good, good. What are you up to, buddy?
Nothing, just enjoying this wonderful California afternoon.
It's great. You got back from Chicago, and now it's so nice out
here. Thank you. I thought you were going to say, like, Grand Rapids or something like that.
Yes.
You missed an opportunity.
All your family there in Michigan, I'm sure they're freezing back there, but it's fairly warm here. It's supposed to start raining and stuff pretty soon. But a lot of stuff we want to talk about. First things first, I wanted to get to what happened on the coaching change front. It looks like Carl Smith, who is supposed to be coming to USC and take over the play-calling duties, he's out. What's going on there?
Well, they've hired former Denver Bronco quarterbacks coach and play caller Jeremy Bates, who is a young guy, like 32 years old, really, really bright guy. People think very highly of this dude. I mean, he was he was going to interview for a couple of offensive coordinator positions in the NFL, very high on the Lions list. The Buccaneers had expressed some interest. I think the Raiders were looking at him. And, you know, instead he chose to come to USC, which is, says a lot about the university, says a lot about what Pete Carroll does here. I think it's an upgrade over Carl Smith. I wasn't here when Carl was working with Liner, and obviously Liner had a great year in that one year. And, you know, Carl Smith has a ton of experience, too, as an NFL coordinator. But Carl Smith really wasn't going to get out and recruit. I think Jeremy Bates is a younger guy. I think he'd probably relate a little bit better with players, and I think he's a guy that they can use to maybe close a little bit with some of the guys that are wavering, some guys that are on the fence, you know, offensively, he's a guy you can bring in and say, look, you know, I made Jay Cutler an All-Pro, you know, I made Brandon Marshall an All-Pro. Here's what we can do for you.
Yeah, Carl Smith kind of had this had a mystique about him, I guess a little bit you could say, because whenever he showed up, the team seemed to play really well afterwards. So even after he was, you know, not on the team after his 2004 season, he would show up on campus every once in a while, usually after USC was kind of in an offensive lull, and he would hang out with Pete Carroll a little bit. And for whatever reason, that game, they'd start putting up a lot of points. So it was kind of, there was a little bit of mystique there. But like you said, he was going to be, he was going to be a play caller, but he wasn't going to be a guy that would be as hands-on as Pete Carroll likes to be. So with Bates coming in, he'll definitely be out there on the recruiting trail. I mean, he's got a lot of energy, and Jay Cutler this week said a lot of really nice things about him. I think you posted that up there on the Peristyle, some of the nice things he said. But yeah, I think his kind of youthful energy or something would be good for the staff.
Yeah, and I think it's an exciting hire. I mean, and I was actually just talking to a friend of ours, Bruce Feldman, a minute ago about this, and I don't know, the thing I brought up was that I think it's always nice to bring somebody in from the outside every once in a while. I know we talked about this before with, you know, the original offensive and defensive coordinator searches. Obviously, Pete likes to bring guys he knows well. You know, this offseason, he's brought in two guys from outside the program, and that should be a lot of new ideas, a lot of new things that they can kind of bounce off Coach Carroll and, you know, add into the Trojan system. I think that's always a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. I'm happy to see some outside blood there. It just, it does get, I mean, for us, covering the same people over and over again isn't quite as fun. You'd rather get some new faces and stuff. It is a young it is a young guy, though. And, you know, you have a brand new defensive coordinator that doesn't really have a whole lot of experience. He's just been a position coach. Same thing on the offensive side of the ball. Now you have, you know, a guy like John Morton who hasn't been an offensive coordinator before, but he won't be really calling the plays. I mean, there's a lot of young, inexperienced coaching talent there, and they could be really good, but you know, they don't have as many battles in the trenches and stuff as a guy like Carl Smith. So it's a little strange that you have both coordinators being so kind of wet behind the ears that you're going into the season where, you know, you have another chance for a championship run.
Yeah, the more I've thought about this, the hiring Rocky as the defensive coordinator, Rocky Seto, he's not as inexperienced, I mean, as we think. I mean, he's coached, you know, he's coached linebackers, he's coached secondary, he played, he's worked in video operations. I mean, he's done essentially everything already on this Trojan staff except, you know, take snaps at quarterback. And I mean, he's really, you know, he probably knows Pete Carroll's defense better than anybody else on the staff, you know, probably better than anybody Pete could have brought in. And really, you know, obviously with Coach Carroll calling the defensive plays, probably, I don't see that being a big issue.
No, it's a good point there that who is the real de facto defensive coordinator? It's really Pete Carroll, you know, and, you know, who's going to make the calls? I'm sure Pete Carroll has veto power over just about anything. And then the interesting aspect here is who's the real offensive coordinator? Morton's been named the offensive coordinator, and now two different quarterback coaches have been given the play calling duties ahead of him. I mean, I don't know if you've talked to anybody about how that's going to work, but isn't it kind of interesting? One guy's the offensive coordinator, but another guy calls the plays.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of strange. What it does is it takes a little more off the plate of the guy who's calling the plays. You don't have to worry about organizing the meetings. You don't have to worry about all of that kind of administrative stuff that, you know, a guy like Jeremy Bates, who hasn't been coaching in college for quite some time, might be new to him. That would be maybe the type of stuff that could trip him up. I think that's really where John Morton kind of steps into sort of like, you know, an MVC of sorts, a most valuable coach, because he'll take on that responsibility. He's been around it. He knows what they want to do in those administrative capabilities, and he knows those responsibilities, and he'll take care of those.
An MVC, huh? Where did that come from?
Sure. I don't know.
The most valuable coach.
Missouri Valley Conference.
Yeah.
Also an MVC.
And the most valuable coach. All right. So that's cool. And then, obviously, another thing, the big news that happened on the team was USC lost their quarterback, and Mark Sanchez going to the NFL. You heard of him? We talked about him a little bit. That happened like the day after we did the podcast last week, so it's a little bit old news, but we can just kind of touch on it, and we'll probably talk to Coach Harvey Hyde in the next segment a little bit about it as well. What were your overall thoughts on that whole thing and how it went down?
I want to bring something up here about the last podcast, if we could, quickly.
Okay.
You asked me at the end of the last podcast if the coaching things were done. And I said, I can't imagine they did anymore. And sure enough, they hired a new coach.
Right.
Don't do that to me anymore. And you feel stupid.
Come on.
No, I mean, honestly, like okay, just don't ask me if the coaching thing is finally done, because who knows, something nuts could happen.
Anything else could happen, yes. All right.
Yeah, I would doubt it again. That's why I'm not going to say, oh, there's no way, but I would doubt it.
Rocky Seto becomes the head coach for, who knows, all right, for the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Of the Toronto Argonauts of the CFL or something like that, yeah. No, Sanchez, yeah, I mean, I think really what it came down to for him was it was a two-pronged decision. He could either return to school and maybe become a better NFL prospect in terms of longevity of his career and stuff like that, maybe enter the league and be a little more prone to having early success, or he could come out early when the time was right. I mean, really, I know there have been a lot of people who have been kind of down on his decision, but the timing of it, when you look at the other quarterbacks coming out, really there wasn't going to be a better time for him to come out than this year, realistically speaking. And you know, so if he wants to be a higher draft pick, get paid more, and do those kinds of things, and then, you know, and kind of start that aspect of his life, which is the impression that I got from the press conference, is that he just kind of, he was ready to start that part of, you know, his journey, I guess. Then yeah, it made sense. I mean, the unfortunate thing about it was that, you know, Sanchez going pro really wasn't even the story of that day. It was more how Pete Carroll reacted to it, coming right out and saying, you know, I don't agree with this decision. The odds are stacked against him. You know, there's a 60-some-odd% chance that underclassmen quarterbacks fail, all of these things. I mean, laying out essentially everything that he probably told Sanchez in the process, laying all of that stuff out there, you know, with Mark sitting next to him. It was kind of awkward, I thought.
Yeah, that was definitely a little bit awkward, and he kind of got a bad rap from the media and stuff. And you know, to me, what it looked like, I mean, I was standing almost right in front of him or sitting right in front of him when he said that stuff. He wasn't happy, and I think some of it was shock. You know, he doesn't like to lose. If he's, you know, shooting hoops at lunch, you know, on the football field, whatever, he's a competitor. He likes winning. I think he thought he had Sanchez signed, sealed, and delivered. He was going to come back, and I think, I don't know if he got complacent or what, but I think he really felt that Sanchez was coming back. And the intel that we got, we talked to some of the players. It seems like Sanchez told some of his offensive players, a prominent receiver, a prominent tailback we talked to, that he was coming back as soon as like a couple days before this all went down on that Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that was going around the locker room. And then, you know, to get, so almost, you know, Sanchez must have changed his mind later on or told different people different stuff. I don't know. But it seemed like, from reading Pete Carroll, it seemed like he thought he had it won and lost it. And there wasn't much he could do. And, you know, I don't think he was too happy about it.
No, he wasn't happy. I mean, you know, he apologized later on reportedly and stuff like that. I'm sure he did, and I don't think he meant it maliciously. I think his emotions just got the best of him. It was a very un-Carroll reaction to stuff. A guy who's been so laid back and so cool, you know, in so many different circumstances and stuff like that. I mean, I thought it was very un-Carroll-like the way he kind of responded to that. But I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, he's a competitor, and he does, you know, have a large amount of disdain for losing. So, I mean, I could understand why he'd react like that. Personally, I mean, I don't think you can argue with a lot of what he said, but for me, the issue was the timing of it and the way it kind of came across and the way it was presented. That being said, I'm not sure if he regrets it. He probably doesn't, knowing Pete, a little bit. Like, I wouldn't think he would regret what he did. I'm not sure that he should or not. I don't know. I think it's interesting, just the kind of the message that it could possibly send to other players and stuff like that about leaving early. I mean, they've had such a remarkable track record in keeping guys in school and stuff like that, and keeping guys here for, you know, 4 or 5 years if they want them. And I think that was part of it too, was maybe shock or something like that. I don't know. Like I said, very un-Carroll-like, I thought.
It was weird. And then there was a lot of talk and people talking on the message boards about that he didn't have a podium and stuff. I mean, it's the same setup that you have for every press conference in that room. I mean, basically you're sitting at that chair, there's a microphone, and there's a cord that runs back to a box in the back of the room, so you don't have to have like 50 microphones up there, and then everyone else plugs into that box in the back. It's like an audio mixer box or whatever the heck, you know, I don't know what they call it. And so
technical.
That's
a very technical term.
Yeah,
audio mixer box.
Yeah. And it wasn't any different from that setup, but he made a statement, And I believe this is how it went down. He stood, I think, I'm just trying to recall this correctly. He stood up, and Tim Tesslin, the sports information director, comes over and is like trying to get him to sit down to answer a few questions. And he just kind of, you know, because all the cameras are basically pointed at you kind of sitting. Well, when he goes to answer the questions, he's now standing up with his kind of leaning over with his hands on the desk. And Tim Tesslin like asked him a couple times to sit down, and he would. I mean, he was mad. Like there was not. I mean, he wasn't listening to Tim. He was just. I'm going to answer
sitting
this.
Down.
Yeah, I'm
gonna
not sitting
stand
down
up here.
Yeah, and yeah. It's funny that he talked about a podium. Like there's never really a podium there. I don't. I mean, maybe we wanted to sit down or whatever. It was and it was different. And then he left obviously before you know Mark Sanchez came up next to answer questions and stuff. And I think he does have Mark's best interests in mind, and you know, I think he thinks he's doing because you know they came back and said it'd be a second round pick, but I think in this circumstance it's going to work out for Mark because he will be at worst the second quarterback taken, and it maybe it does slip to the second round, but I don't think so. I think that someone will take a chance on him.
I don't think he will.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think you're still a first round quarterback. And it's interesting, you know, you said he's got Mark's best interest in mind too, but you know, he also has the team's best interest in mind. Obviously this team would have been a lot more highly regarded had Mark returned. Now, do I think that there's going to be a huge drop off? I mean, there may be some, but they've been through this before so many times with so many, you know, new quarterbacks and questions and stuff like that. This isn't Washington State we're talking about. These aren't guys that they brought out to the practice field, you know, pull them out of frat houses or anything like that and said, oh, hey, can you throw a football, Aaron Corp? You know, right. I mean, these are highly, highly regarded quarterbacks.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it happens a lot. And I think people do that every year. How are you going to replace blah, blah, blah? How are you going to replace blah, blah, blah? And, you know, every year they do. And, you know, is it going to be the same? Has anyone been like Reggie Bush? No, but they've had effective running games. And they've had effective guys that can catch balls out of the backfield and stuff. I mean, you've been able to replace guys. Maybe not as good, but, you know, in the overall, I think the system and the schemes that they use, you know, and the talent that you have, it just works, you know. And if you happen to lose a whole bunch of guys, like you lose all your linebackers, they have enough talent and they have a good scheme where they'll put guys in and they'll still perform.
Yeah, I mean, were you more surprised by Taylor's decision than Mark's?
I was. I was definitely more surprised with Mays coming back. And it's good, you know, you look at the secondary now. People are saying, "Oh, there's only one starter back." No, the whole secondary is coming back basically. And that, I mean, it was already an amazing secondary. It's going to be really good. And you got guys like T.J. Bryant with another year under their belt. You know, Sharice Wright will be back. You know, people thought he was the best cover corner. Yeah, they lose Kerry Harris, but you still have Kevin Thomas over there. You know, Will Harris got a lot of playing time. So you got him coming back. A lot of starting experience back in that secondary.
Josh Pinkert
will be back. Yeah, I mean,
they don't lose much there. I mean, the more I think about it, the more that I talk myself into believing that their defense is going to be just fine next year. I mean, when you look at stuff, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of pieces off of this defense missing. And will they be the best defense in the country and the most dominant? Maybe not. But maybe they'll ball hawk a little more. Maybe they'll force some more turnovers. Maybe, you know, with a more experienced with such an experienced secondary and a group that they're going to lean on, maybe that's what they look to. Maybe that's the kind of defense is going to be.
And you talked about this a little bit in your winter workout piece, which will be our last subject. But you know, Chris Galippo staying healthy, I think, is going to be really important because he's a guy that is a ball hawk and he will make plays and he's not going to make the kind of mistakes that Ray Malaluga would make at times. And, you know, you just watch him and you see him running into the line sometimes and the running back going the other way. And you're wondering, well, where's he going on that play? But I mean, he's a missile out there and he can make a lot of big plays, but he was out of position sometimes too. And a guy like Galippo won't be. So it'll be a different kind of look at middle linebacker and some of the other spots. But, you know, you might even see a guy like Galippo perform better and make some more turnovers and be a little bit more of a ball hawk, like you said.
Yeah, another guy I think that can make some plays is Michael Morgan. Is another guy that I'm kind of high on right now. Just because I really like his frame. I mean, he's got such long arms, and he's so wiry, and he's quick, and he was. I mean, do you remember the game? I think he started against Oregon, and the way that he was always around the ball in that first set before he got hurt. I mean, like he wasn't finishing off a lot of tackles by himself. I mean. But he was slowing guys down, making sure other guys got over there, and I mean, was in on a bunch of tackles. I think he only had like one solo tackle, but he assisted some like 7 or 8 tackles in the first half.
He was everywhere. Yeah, and it's the same thing. You got to keep him healthy and stuff. And But we'll see. There'll be lots of stuff to talk about. Spring football, we're going to see these guys in action. Real quick, we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to get your update on when a workout started this week. Give a little update there.
You know, I was out there bright and early on Tuesday for the first workout of the year, and none other than Matt Barkley in attendance with the other quarterbacks, Mitch Mustain and Aaron Korb, working with the line. Butch Lewis was not out there, recovering from a surgery. And I don't know, it was a... it was a good workout. I mean, they got right to work. I'll say this. You'll hear me say this again throughout workouts. My favorite guy to watch in workouts is Ronald Johnson, just because his feet are so fast. Yeah. Just watch him do those footwork drills. It's ridiculous. It's like you remember the cartoons where it's like, you know, like the guy's feet will be moving, but like the top of his body's like 100% still. That's what it looks like. Only he's like moving. Actually, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, he's so quick. I don't know. He's a guy who I think can make a really big jump next year.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Well, we also have Kenichi Udeze, former USC defensive end, who was battling cancer and looks like he's doing really well out there. He was out there working well with the team a little bit too, huh?
Yeah, he was doing more stuff on his own, but he was out there taking everything in. And, I think that's always good to have those guys around, especially a guy like that who's just working so hard with the team. I mean, you look at him and you look at what the team's doing and you can say, you know, this is what you can get to. This is the work ethic we want. This is the virtues that we kind of instill here. And it's such a great example. One last thing about winter workouts, too.
Sure.
Can I throw something else in quick?
Yeah.
Taylor Mays has been, at least in the first workout, people have wondered a lot who would be kind of this, would step up and be the leader. Taylor Mays has been doing, or at least at the first workout, did a remarkable job making sure everybody very vocal. Big smile on his face, pushing guys and stuff like that. I talked to a couple players and asked him, you know, who are the guys that are kind of stepping up and showing the way for everybody else? And without a second of hesitation, everybody I spoke to said Taylor Mays.
All right. Well, we'll be watching him. We'll get more updates for winter workouts as we head towards spring ball. Dan Wojcicki, thanks again for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
All right, everybody else, we'll be back. Really short break. We're going to have Harvey Hyde, who's hitting in the Albert Pujols spot, number 3. We'll talk to him last right after this short break.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. It's our third and final segment, and it's hitting in this Albert Pujols spot. We have the coach, Harvey Hyde, normally our leadoff man, but he was traveling from Vegas, so we're having him come in at the end of the show this week. How are you doing today, coach?
You know what? I'm doing pretty good. Things seem to be rolling along for the Trojans as far as recruiting. We've got a lot of coaching changes going on. So, I think we got a lot to talk about, especially with the National Letter of Intent not too far away and all the changes that have been going on, the effect that might be or take as far as part of the Trojans and recruiting and next year's lack of Mark Sanchez, what's going to happen there and so on. But, you know, before we get started, let's thank the guy that makes it happen. That's Southern California Ticket Service.
Definitely. Southern California Tickets, they're our sponsor for the Harvey Hyde segment of the Peristyle Podcast, sctickets.com. Give them a call, 1-800-888-7287 if you need tickets for concerts, the theater, sporting events, all that stuff. Southern California Tickets, Southern California Tickets is your way to go. And I know, Coach, you like to use them. Anyone else out there, if you need tickets, give them a call.
You're exactly right. Buckle up, man. Give them a call. Tape your ankles. But you're on your way to the event you want to go to.
For sure, Coach. And you mentioned a lot of the topics we wanted to kind of get into today. I guess maybe the first thing is the Mark Sanchez stuff that happened almost a week ago. I got to talk with Dan Wojcicki a little bit about it in the last segment. You know, being a former coach yourself, it seemed like the biggest news out of this wasn't that Mark was leaving. It's just the reaction that Pete Carroll gave during the press conference. What did you think about that whole thing?
Well, you know, it's easy for everybody to sit back and evaluate what they would have done a day later. Or that's like saying, hey, you know, I wouldn't have called that play. I would have called another play because you had more time to think about it and you wrote the column the next day and the play didn't work. So now you have a lot of time to think about why it didn't work. Coach Carroll was emotional. Coach Carroll, I know, was very upset because he's losing Mark Sanchez, and it meant a lot to him. I know he's very close to Mark Sanchez, and he meant a lot to the USC Trojan football team because he was not only a quarterback, but he's a leader. He would have been a Heisman Trophy candidate. He had his Bobby best game of the year and the final game of the year, and that momentum he wanted to carry over with the offense with 10 starters coming back if he would have come back, as far as being the strength of next year's team while the defense reloaded. And to have that happen, especially after Taylor Mays, the one that everyone thought that was coming out, had a press conference and said, no, I'm coming back, I think was a shock to Coach Carroll. And I think it was a very emotional moment of disappointment for him. And I think that he expressed that. And I think he certainly has a right to express that. He's coached this kid. He's recruited this kid. He's had this kid around. He's taken care of his injuries or whatever he's needed to do. He's very close to the family. And whenever you lose a family member, you don't. If you're not upset, then you really didn't love that person. And he sincerely loves Mark Sanchez. As he mentioned, if this was my son, this is the advice I would be giving him. So, you know, can people deal with that? Yeah, if they can't deal with it, that's tough. I think a coach has a right to at that moment of when, you know, like there's almost like been a death in your family, to express his feelings. Now, it's easy for people to come back the next day and write a column, or for people to do talk radio. Hey, Coach Carroll, we've never seen him like that. Coach Carroll, what would he say about that? And why did he have to act like that? Because he was deeply hurt. And yes, he has come back and said, well, didn't mean it quite that way, and I was upset. Well, sure, well, he has a right to be upset. He didn't expect this to happen, and he wanted the kid, and he sincerely believes that the kid needs another year in college, and it's really upsetting him. So I feel that, you know, a lot of people, you know, remember, when you spend so much time with these kids, they're like family members, and you treat them like a family person. And he sincerely felt that the kid went out and he shouldn't have gone out. And so I feel he has a right to tell us what his thoughts are. But he took a lot of heat on that. And I don't think the media should have done that because they have a lot of time to think about it and write about it then later. So, you know, it's like you got 20 seconds to call a player, 25 seconds to call a play. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes you come back at a press conference, I wish I hadn't called that play. But you didn't have a lot of time to think about it. No. He was dealing with emotion when he said that. So, you know, they'll be friends. They'll always be friends. Mark will always be a Trojan. His family was very close to Pete Carroll and the Trojan football family. So it was a disappointing day, I don't think, for Pete Carroll. I think it was for Trojan football to lose someone that was such a leader, a captain, someone that meant so much to USC football.
Coach, I agree with you. And I think part of that emotion, I mean, it might have been added to the fact that Pete Carroll definitely, I mean, the possibility was there that he got some other bad news on that day. And that's kind of our next topic. Carl Smith, who was hired as the quarterback coach, was supposed to call the plays. Looks like he's going, I don't know if they've signed for real yet, but it looked like he was going to the Browns at the time when this press conference came out. And so I think Pete Carroll might have actually heard that he was losing his quarterback coach and had to look for somebody else. But, you know, even no matter when he heard about it, he turned around real quickly and got somebody, a really well thought out of Coach Bates out of the Denver Broncos organization.
Well, you know, yeah, and I think that is emotional buildup as far as what happened in 2 days, losing Mark Sanchez, and then here's a coach, and you know, I don't know Carl Smith. I'm going to be honest with you, but here's someone who was out of a job. here's someone who hung around USC for a period of 3 or 4 weeks, waiting to be hired, and Coach Carroll continued with his loyalty in bringing Coach Carl Smith back. I guarantee you he'll never be back at SC again coaching, offered a job. And was, he's left there twice now. And he hires him and names him as the play caller and wants to move on with recruiting and so on. And then Carl Smith gets an offer from Cleveland and more or less says, I'm leaving you. Well, you know, if you don't want to be here, that's fine. Then we don't want you here. But, you know, to need a job, want a job, be hired, and then be here so short of a period of time, to me shows no loyalty. Sure, you always want to better yourself. But if you wanted to stay in pro football, why did you come back and get back into college? If you wanted to stay in pro football, wait and get all these pro jobs. They had 10 jobs open. So stay and network and work on the NFL side of it. Don't come back and work at SC and mislead a coach or mislead kids. This is my feeling. You know, if Coach Smith hears me say this, that's tough. and I mean, it disrupts your routine and your continuity and your recruiting process, and it upsets kids because it gets kids are upset because they lose a player, they lose their offensive coordinator in Steve Sarkisian, then they hire a coach, then he leaves. It's this period of what's next that you don't want in a football program.
Well, Coach,
I want to say this. But you know what? Always things work out for the best. And I think it has in this situation with the hiring of Jemery Bates. I really believe this, and we'll talk about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, not at all. But have you had a situation where, I mean, it's a very crucial time right now when you're talking about the weeks before signing day. And even though Carl Smith wasn't going to be a big recruiter, it still could be a blow, and it changes things on the offensive side of the ball. Have you had that happen a lot, coaching changes, when you were a coach during this critical period leading up to signing day?
Yes. I'll tell you, whenever you have a winning program and you have great coaches surrounding you, there is always someone there who wants to know why you win, and they want to have that in their program, just like Sarkisian took Holt and two or three other people from the SC program to Washington to help bring that type of winning attitude to the Huskies. Well, yes, I've lost coaches, and I tell you, it's a very difficult thing to do to replace coaches, because as a coach, you have already coached your coaches to what you want taught to players as far as on the field, as far as X and O's and techniques, the routines of practice, the routines of meetings, what you expect when at a certain time, and recruiting. What is our recruiting policies? How do we recruit? I give you an area to recruit. Then we follow up and what we look for and how we evaluate. Now you lose these coaches. Now you got to come back and you got to coach the coaches before the coaches can coach the kids. So you're then now in a process when you go to practice, you're watching out a little bit more on the coaches to make sure they're teaching what you want taught. And when you have a lot of changes, it's not good. And it breaks up the consistency of success. And the number one thing that has hurt most programs out there, like New England, the Patriots, every single year Belichick is losing his offensive coordinator or his defensive coordinator or somebody to another NFL team or a college team, like Charlie Wise, to Notre Dame. So it is a difficult thing to do, but people do want people from winning traditions and winning staffs to be a part of theirs. But in Carl Smith's situation, I mean, here's a guy that came around, hung around USC, wanted the job, got the job, and then went back to the NFL. And this is what I'm saying is, if he wanted to stay in the NFL, he should have stayed away from USC, let Coach know what that I'm looking for an NFL job, and wait until those jobs open and stay there. Network. Get a job. And because it caused just another moment of like you say, uneasiness with the staff and with the players and so on by Sanchez leaving and then Sarkisian leaving and then Holt leaving and then Carl Smith coming in and then Carl Smith leaving. So, yeah, I would say Coach Carroll had a reason to be upset.
Yeah, and you know, but looking ahead, Coach Bates looks like to be a really good coach. Jay Cutler, the quarterback for the Broncos, said a lot of good things about him. I guess the only concern, I get your thoughts on this, but the only concern I would have, Coach, is going from the NFL to college, you have about 20 hours a week in college to coach these kids. So, you know, your playbook or whatever your schemes work in the NFL, are you coaching guys like 8 hours a day? Because you can't do that in college. So that would be the biggest adjustment, I would think, is there's limited coaching time he's going to get with the players he's going to be recruiting and coaching at the college level as opposed to what he did in the NFL.
Well, yeah, that's true. But let me tell you, in college, you study and kids watch videos on their own and there's just as much effort put in college coaching as in the NFL. I mean, you know, some of these guys, you know, think that the longer they stay in the office and they sleep in their office and all of that, how much smarter they're going to be and they're going to outwork everybody. All they're doing is that it shows me that there's a lack of experience because they can't figure it out. I think that that's overdoing. I think there's a certain number of hours where you're productive and you're sharp and you can get it done, and there's a certain number of period of time when you're not productive and you should be away from the football office, as players should be away from the weight room and the football field to rejuvenate and charge your battery to come back with positiveness and be ready to go with fresh legs and fresh brains. So I think Jeremy Bates is a great check, a find. I've checked with a lot of my friends in the NFL who know him personally, but I did not know him. I knew his dad, Jim Bates. And he's got enthusiasm. He's got youth. He's a hard worker. He knows the game. I think it's going to be a real positive move for USC. I really believe Pete Carroll here has got someone that will be really good for him.
All right. Well, yeah, I'm sure Trojan fans will be looking forward to seeing that. We'll be covering. We'll talk Coach Bates this spring. We'll try to get him in the offseason leading up to spring football. But you can check out uscfootball.com for more of that. And, Coach, and we're almost out of time, unfortunately. We're in the last segment. But there were some questions that came in and a couple comments I wanted to kind of share with you, if that's all right.
Sure.
Yeah, Matt wrote in, and he says he really likes you, Coach Hyde. But he wanted to know if I just say hello and then leave the room for 20 minutes. So not quite, but, you know, Coach Hyde can give, you know, some long answers sometimes. But it's good. I mean, you always share such good insights and stuff. But Matt was really fond of what you do on the podcast.
Well, tell Matt thank you very much. And just keep listening. And if you do have any special questions that you'd like answered, we'll do our very best at answering them.
And then he also had a comment about Taylor Mays, and Terry and Day also had a question about Taylor Mays. So I'll kind of combine those two things together. So Terry and asked, he wanted to know if it would be beneficial to use Taylor Mays in the same way that the Steelers use Troy Polamalu, kind of all over the field, blitzing, run support for pass, you know, pass defense and all that stuff, because he's so big. And, you know, he's got great speed and toughness, and he's got the, obviously Mays has the skills, and Matt was commenting that we made some comments last week. I did with Dan Wojcicki about having Mays line up and play like the Wildcat at quarterback and run the spread offense for a little bit. Mays even made a comment in the papers about that too, to try and get him some Heisman votes and stuff, but just kind of, you know, Mays coming back is probably the biggest surprise, but just kind of get your thoughts on that a little bit, Coach.
Yeah, we will. In fact, I made a comment. I said, if you want to make some changes, remember I said, have him play barefooted a couple of ways.
Yeah.
But to demonstrate his toughness. But, I agree. I think that he has he's got the physical frame and the ability to be one of the greatest with his ability. But I think he needs to become more a part of the game and into the game more. I believe that. You know, he has the ability to be a Ronnie Lott or somebody of that ability, yet he hasn't had the chance yet playing safety to really to utilize his great skills. And I think he needs to be in a position where he can tackle more. I noticed that when he makes his great hits, rather than wrapping up, and you guys may agree and may not agree, he's blocking you down in most situations. He's running full speed and blocking you down. I think in the NFL and at the next level, you will miss those tackles because great running backs will avoid that type of hit in most cases. So I think he does need to get into the game. He does need the experience of stopping the run and getting involved in the game. I'd love to see him. You know, like I mentioned last week, you know, he needs to show the courage of the body. He's got to show that it is a man of steel that is wearing this uniform. Was he, you know, if you wanted to paint or draw a super person in a uniform, it's Taylor Mays. Now he needs to take this and perform to that ability in the game. Not that he hasn't, but in more fashion, more ways. And that's why I said, you know, a weak side linebacker would demonstrate not only that he can run and hit and blitz and so on, but he could tackle and be involved in more plays. And I'm not saying he's going to do that or Coach Carroll's going to play him there or a spy type of guy or an elephant or Ellison type of situation in the box on first down or against running teams. And then he will prove himself as far as the toughness part. Like Troy Polamalu, let me tell you, is there any doubt about his toughness? Is there any doubt about any part of his game? There isn't. Yet we haven't seen that part yet of Taylor Mays with his physical stature as far as yet in college football. I haven't. I've seen him. I know he's a great player. But I want to see him be a Polamalu in college football. Would you agree with me?
I do. And I think Charger fans are going to see that. He's been very vocal over. We talked to Dan Wiecke in the last segment. So I think you're going to see a lot more of Taylor Mays. He really has a chance to be the leader of this defense. And so many guys gone, he's going to be the superstar. And I think you're going to see him step into that role really well.
I want to see him do that too. I want to see him blocking people, hitting people, leading the defense, always around the football. Just like if you remember last Sunday that when you saw even Polamalu stopping a quarterback sneak.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely tremendous. So you got to see Taylor Mays being that same type of figure with the defense at USC.
All right, we'll see that. Well, Coach, unfortunately, we're out of time, but thanks again for coming in and sharing all your thoughts. And the three spot this week, but you'll be back to lead off next week, I'm sure.
Well, you put me anywhere you want. Just so I'm in the lineup, okay?
Excellent. And thanks again to Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com. Everybody else, we will talk to you next week. It'll be episode number 50, so half a hundred. So everyone have a good week, and we'll talk to you then.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can now download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player. Just search for Peristyle Podcast the next time you log into iTunes.